You're listening to Lunch Break, a podcast for those of us who want more than just a job. I'm your host and career coach, Janelle Abrahami. I'm bringing you insights and actionable takeaways from my decade of career coaching experience and inspiring conversations from folks who are building fulfilling careers on their own terms. Whether you're a corporate go-getter or an entrepreneurial spirit, you're in the right place. Together, we'll help you create a career that feels meaningful and meant for you. Let's dig in. Hello, my silly sunflower. I have been so excited to bring you today's episode of Mentored. And as a reminder, Mentored is a series here on Lunch Break where I bring in a subject matter expert to help us understand and overcome challenges that are specific to our career happiness. And today is tackling one that always comes up in almost every career conversation I have with you, either in the DMs or live, and that is perfectionism and people pleasing. And today's mentor is actually a duo of mentors. We have Alicia Franklin and Cass Gratwick-Sarl, who are clinical psychologists and together the founders of TEND, which is a practice that helps women tend to themselves and step into their brilliance. And as I've been conversing with Alicia and Cass over the last few months to really understand their expertise and how they help women in their practice, it's become so clear that they are actually experts in the intersection of perfectionism, people-pleasing, and their impact on women's careers. So lucky us. Together in this episode, we're diving into things like what perfectionism actually looks like at work and how it holds you back from reaching your full potential in ways that you may not even know, how to pinpoint your own perfectionist and people-pleasing tendencies, and then actionable advice on how you can shift into more empowering habits right now, and how women especially can strike a balance between striving for excellence, like we often still want to do, but avoiding the pitfalls of perfectionism and people-pleasing. Plus, Cass and Alicia share some really amazing success stories of women that they have worked with who have overcome perfectionism and people-pleasing and have achieved incredible career wins, like writing best-selling books and appearing on TV, and how that is so possible for you too. So if you identify as a perfectionist, a people-pleaser, and wonder if there's ever a way that you can break this cycle, break this habit, this episode will help you do that right now. Make sure, honestly, that you have your notes app available if you're listening on your phone or a notebook. I have a feeling you're going to be jotting down lots of gems and takeaways. All right, let's dig right into today's episode of Mentored. All right, I am here sitting down with the co-founders of TEND, Cass and Alicia. I've introduced you just a little bit at the top of this episode, but would love for each of you to give us the rundown on who you are and what you do. Alicia, why don't we start with you?
Hi, my name's Alicia, Dr. Alicia Franklin. I am a clinical psychologist. I've worked in organizational psychology, clinical psychology, but really my heart is in working with Cass and the work that we do founding TEND, where we really focus on helping women to overcome barriers that hold them back from stepping into their potential.
My name is Cass, well, Dr. Cassandra Gratwick-Sarl. It's a real mouthful for anyone. So I'm also a clinical psychologist, and I've also predominantly worked in a clinical setting, but also in an organizational one where I actually had the pleasure of meeting you, Janelle. And yeah, we started TEND a few years ago now. Should I dive into
that? Yeah, so what is that founder origin story? How did the two of you come to join forces?
Well, I can jump in with how we met, how we came across each other. So a bit of background. Cass and I met when we were bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I'm not sure if that's an Australianism, but when we were doctoral students at university in Canberra, which is a relatively small city despite being Australia's capital. So we had plenty of time to get to know each other. We were studying together and working together, and by second year Cass and I had become housemates. It was a very complementary relationship. So Cass is an excellent cook and I am an excellent eater, so we were off to a good start. But over that time we really learned that both of us share very similar values and similar outlook and wanted our work to have same kind of impact. So leaving our doctorates, we were filled with all of these, you know, new tools and ideas that we were so excited about that we were using with clients. But we also recognized that many people didn't get access to those until they were in a chair in a therapy room, which is often, you know, when people are struggling. So we wanted to give people those tools earlier in the piece. And I remember on one of our long drives between Canberra and Sydney, because our partners were living at Sydney in Sydney at the time, Cass said, you know what, we should run a workshop and we'll call it Life School. And it was a light bulb moment, and that's what we did. So we ran these workshops predominantly for women, giving them the tools to live meaningful and fulfilling connected lives. And I think as soon as we did the first one, we knew we were in the right place. So that was 8 or 9 years ago, and yeah, we've been working together ever since.
Wow. And so that first session was called Life School. Was there one particular topic or theme that kind of just resonated from the participants that you knew, ooh, this is going to be a big one in the rest of our work?
It was funny, actually. We tried to jam as much as possible in there. We covered like 5 or 6 like really major topics. We were just so desperate to give people as much as we possibly could. But what really came out of those workshops was we sort of identified 2 main things. One, that our audience was really women. I think we had 1 or 2 guys that came along and, you know, bless them, I don't think it would have been easy for them. but the other thing that we really learned was that we were surrounded, and Life School was full of, you know, mainly our friends, but then they brought people along that they knew. But we were surrounded by these brilliant women who really felt held back in some sort of way. They really doubted themselves. They felt stuck. And it was particularly at a time when a lot of women were sort of going through their, you know, quarter life crisis, where they'd started working and thinking, what on earth am I doing here? Like, why is this so hard? And they really were coming up against these systemic barriers, which are very present in the workplace for women. So we really wanted to give women tools to overcome that. So we had a short hiatus where I moved to the US for a few years. And then when we came back, we knew that we couldn't address necessarily the systemic barriers that women face in the workplace, but we certainly could help them with, you know, those barriers that they'd internalized, because a lot of us internalize what happens in the environment around us. And so we really wanted to help women to be able to move beyond those barriers for themselves, so they're not dealing with these consequences of these systemic barriers, and help them move into their potential through coaching, workshops, etc. And we really just wanted to create a space where women could prioritize their own needs. First of all, learn to identify them, prioritize them, and then have a community of like-minded women around them as well.
I think that's really important in terms of framing our conversation today as well. We by no means expect to dismantle the patriarchal systems that have contributed to our feelings of perfectionism or people-pleasing in the first place, but instead kind of navigate ways that we can control the controllables. So our acknowledgement of what's going on with us and how we respond to those feelings of perhaps anxiety that contribute to perfectionism and people pleasing. So to that end, how would the two of you professionally define perfectionism in the context of women's careers?
So perfectionism is really when we're striving for perfection, when we set that bar at the highest level at perfection. So we're expecting us to perform perfectly, for our work to be of the highest standard. There's really no room for error or for hiccups. And it means that we often only feel good about ourselves when we are performing at that level, when we're maintaining those standards. And any time that we sort of dip below those standards, it can send us into a tailspin, where we're very critical of ourselves, we feel terrible, we can get very, very stuck. So this puts a huge amount of pressure on us to maintain these standards and keep striving for perfection. So we can end up in a bit of a cycle of striving for perfection and feeling terrible when we don't, which then motivates us to continue striving. So maybe people can resonate with that. But in terms of women's careers, it means that we're really, really good at perfecting certain tasks or certain skills, but in the long term can cost us dearly in terms of our careers. So often when we're stuck in perfectionism, it means that we aren't taking risks because we don't allow any room for error or room for mistakes. Also means that we don't go for opportunities, we don't dive into things, because so many times we don't feel like we're ready enough or we're not qualified enough. We also don't speak up or use our voices because we think we're not 1000% prepared. So whether that's, you know, signing up to speak at a conference or jumping on a podcast, we just don't trust ourselves enough yet to jump in and do those things. And many times when we're stuck in perfectionism, we're spending long hours, often at night, invisible hours outside of work. I can definitely put my hand up for this one, checking and perfecting our work because we're afraid it'll never be good enough. And what will people think of me if they see it when it's not perfect? In terms of our careers, it means perfectionism really slows us down. Even though we think we're striving for excellence, it can slow us down and end up in many cases burning us out. So I guess from our perspective, perfectionism is really one of those key barriers that holds women back from stepping into their potential.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, especially the holding us back and the burnout part. I absolutely related to that because if you think about what you also articulated is that we're doing so much behind the scenes and after hours, or there's so much scope creep from our work into our life that perfectionism kind of tells us we need to do, that the energy to do that has to come from somewhere and then it has to be taken away from something else. So the burnout from perfectionism, I think, is something that we don't give a lot of attention to, but is kind of a secret opponent in the background. But how would you talk about the link between perfectionism and another huge barrier that so many of my clients and women that I work with talk about, which is people pleasing?
They actually have a very similar origin. So basically, we can understand it as they both come from the same place, which is early on, women in particular are conditioned to be good girls. And I'm using air quotes there. But basically, you know, we're really praised for being polite, for not being too loud, for doing things perfectly, for doing things for other people. And, you know, women in particular are very wired for connection. And so they're particularly good at learning that if I do these things, you will accept me, you will value me, I will be liked. And that's how we feel loved and like a sense of belonging, which is, you know, just so integral to us. So we internalize this message, if I do things perfectly or if I do things for other people, I am worthy, I'm good enough. And it means that we often, when we're not doing those things, we're often filled with doubt or we worry so much about what other people will think about us. And then when we enter the workplace, it just really gets magnified because, you know, many workplaces, we sort of alluded to this before, we're not obviously solving the issues of the patriarchy right here, right now, but, you know, many workplaces weren't designed for women. And even though, you know, leaps and bounds, we still have a long way to go. And so often women really feel like they really need to prove themselves in order to feel accepted or like they belong there. So then, you know, this tendency towards pleasing others, to doing the right thing, the perfectionism just, you know, really gets accentuated. And we end up finding ourselves trying to perfect everything, trying to do everything so people will like us and people pleasing. Yeah. So we get perfectly good at doing what other people want. But unfortunately, both of these strategies are really just based around wanting to be accepted and feel like we belong, but they are sort of ineffective strategies for actually advancing our own careers and our own progress in a lot of ways.
Okay, something that I hear a lot from clients is that they're able to identify that they're a perfectionist or a people pleaser. Whenever I ask them to self-identify, they'd be like, oh yeah, totally a people pleaser. That's so me. Guilty, but they may not understand the actual things that they do throughout the workday that are people pleasing. Can we talk a little bit about the specific signs or the specific actions or tendencies that can point to perfectionism and people pleasing that we may not even recognize or think of?
Sure. So early in the piece, Cass and I did some research into this. We really wanted to get a good sense of women's lived experience. So we ran interviews and we conducted surveys to get a good sense of how these barriers like perfectionism and people pleasing show up for women, particularly in the workplace. And we found that there were certainly patterns. And I guess with perfectionism and with people pleasing, they sort of fell into three key categories. So with perfectionism in the workplace, it often shows up as either overdoing or underdoing. So when we're stuck in overdoing, that's when we're overworking. We've got lots of those invisible hours. We're trying to perfect everything and often really burning ourselves out in the process. So in terms of what you'd notice, it's working longer than your colleague, staying up late at night, delaying, giving things over or getting feedback until you've really perfected something. In terms of underdoing, that's when we delay starting something or doing something until we've really perfected it. So that might be when we're procrastinating, or we delay speaking up in meetings or putting our hands up for job opportunities or different opportunities that come at work, or when we're, you know, really delaying sharing our work until we've perfected it. So yeah, I guess you tend to see either the overdoing, really overworking, overachieving, spending lots of hours and burning out, or the underdoing where we're delaying, holding back, that sort of sense of hiding away, which can really slow us down.
A really nice example of what over and underdoing looks like in the workplace is when we were doing these interviews with women, there was one woman in particular who was extremely successful. She was a lawyer. She worked incredibly hard, and she had this boss who really wanted her to put her hand up for things, go for opportunities, and she just chronically avoided them because she did not think that she was able to take those steps, even though she had, you know, senior management telling her, like, you are ready for this, you need to take this up. She just would not do it because she just didn't think she could do it perfectly. And now she's decided to, you know, she wants to change things up a bit, and now she's trying to work out what that looks like. But again, is feeling really stuck because she doesn't know what the perfect answer is to what that looks like. So it's like a good example of, I think, of how these two behaviors can really show up.
Yeah, I bet so many listeners right now can identify themselves in that story, or even a friend. And I feel like sometimes it's so helpful to, instead of thinking about yourself in these situations, thinking about like, oh, how is my perfectionism getting in my way or my people pleasing? Imagine your friend were in the same situation and they had this amazing opportunity and didn't raise their hand. What would you say to that friend? You would say, no, you're obviously good enough. It's okay if you don't know everything. They're not expecting you to be perfect. But for some reason, that doesn't apply to us individually, 100%. Right?
Yes, we're much better at identifying patterns and really helping to support other people than we often are in recognizing those in ourselves. So yeah, with perfectionism, we can get caught in either overdoing or in underdoing. And when it comes to people pleasing, often this shows up as other doing. So that means that we're really focused on what we need to do to please other people or keep other people happy. So that means that we're often deferring to other people's opinions or looking for direction from them. So rather than stating, this is what I think we should do next, you might hear yourself saying, you know, what do you think we should do next? What's the next move? Where do we go from here? So we're really, you might hear yourself or other people asking for direction more. But we also often, when we're stuck in other doing and people pleasing, we do everything to keep other people happy. So that often looks like saying yes to a lot of things, not having very clear boundaries. And often, you know, as Janelle, you pointed out, that comes at a cost to us. To other areas of our lives. That's when, you know, work and life and fun and all the other things can really get out of whack and out of balance. And in terms of other doing, we also find that women can get caught only saying what they think other people want to hear. So they've done research on this, looking at, you know, women who sort of get stuck trying to charm other people or trying really hard to make people of influence or senior people like them. And in doing that, they often don't really voice their own ideas or their own opinions or their own needs, at risk of the other person not liking what they hear. Those are some examples of ways that we can either get stuck in overdoing, in underdoing, or in other doing. And as you said, Janelle, you know, you might recognize some of these patterns in yourself or in your friends or in your clients, because they do tend to show up time and time again.
I just couldn't help thinking about myself in the very first years of my career, in my super early career, when I was an assistant and a coordinator at this really well-known media company. I remember being too afraid to offer my own opinions because I wanted the chief people officer or the directors or the VPs that I was working with or doing projects for. I never wanted to ruffle the feathers. And I was such a yes man, a yes woman in those situations. When looking back, I want to tell my younger self, have an idea. They actually would appreciate you more if you pushed back in a respectful way, if you offered a different view, instead of saying, oh, whatever you think. Oh, I don't know, whatever you think is fine. I wish that I could go back and tell my younger self, like, this is what's actually happening, and here's how to turn it around. So to that end, okay, we identify these patterns of people-pleasing and perfectionism. What can we do in the moment to turn that behavior around?
Yeah, so obviously this is a big one. And, you know, these behavior patterns are really ingrained in us. They're not our fault that we feel this way. I just want to make that really clear because, you know, this is something that is conditioned in all of us from a really young age. But there is actually one question that we can ask ourselves, which can really shift things for us. And that is, what is driving this behavior? So with perfectionism, you know, the reason why we're stuck in perfectionism is because there's a fear of not being perfect, of not being good enough. With people pleasing, it's a fear of what other people will think or feel about us. So in both cases, we often, our behaviors are driven and our decisions are based on fear and through the eyes of others. So what we really want to do is try and come back to ourselves a lot more and really get connected with what's actually important to me here. So like with perfectionism, for example, we want to reflect on, am I doing this because I'm really worried about how other people will see me and it's not going to be good enough? Or is it more important for me that I focus on my own progress? Is it important for me to get my ideas out there, to share my work, that I take a step forward? So this can mean doing things like sharing work when it's not 100% ready, when it's, you know, good and enough. It can be hard to define what good enough looks like, but if you are spending, you know, you can sometimes just cut in half the amount of time you've spent on something that will often give you, you know, a way of doing it. You can send someone feedback before it's done and say, hey, look, this is not 100% there yet, but I'm just looking for your initial thoughts, because then you can focus your energy more effectively on where it needs to be developed. And it's putting your hand up for opportunities before you're 100% ready. You know, people often quote that research from Lean In around, you know, women don't apply for jobs unless they meet 100% of the criteria. I'm not sure how like accurate that research is because yet to find a source, but it does like come up a lot. You know, we can sort of identify that. People do definitely speak to that. The other thing, and I'm sure Janelle, you would agree with that approach.
Absolutely.
The other thing with people pleasing is, in terms of coming back to ourselves, we want to do things like get better at practicing and setting boundaries. You know, asking ourselves, is it more important that I spend, you know, X amount of hours doing this, or is it more important that I spend time with my friends or family? Saying no because we need to prioritize our well-being in certain circumstances. Or another thing that we can do is write down our thoughts or opinions about something when you're in a meeting, so that you aren't just going with whatever else everyone else is saying, but it gives you the opportunity to think, what do I think about this? And then by writing it down, it's more helpful to then be able to speak to that rather than just trying to wing it in the spot, because chances are you're going to get muddled and stressed about what other people are thinking about you. So writing it down is a nice way. Either way, we just really want to come back to, what is driving this behavior? Am I doing it for someone else, or how can I do something more for me, and steering it back towards myself?
What is driving this behavior? Am I doing it for someone else? And how can I turn it back to me? I love the writing everything down. I think that also grounds you in the moment too, because we've also all heard about, you know, when someone's speaking and we have a thought, we're just thinking about what we're going to say next or debating whether or not we should say it at all. I also feel like writing it down can then take it out of our brain, let it rest somewhere else, and then we can take in the other context of the conversation or the situation to help us make up our mind if it's worth sharing that input, or if we're better served not to. But then either way, it comes from our decision making instead of what we think someone else wants to hear. How can employers or bosses support their employees who struggle with perfectionism or people-pleasing tendencies?
So this is an interesting one because, you know, organizations respond differently to perfectionism and people pleasing. So in some ways, organizations might feel that people pleasing and perfectionism are a good thing for them because it's really good at producing worker bees, you know, people who perfectly produce work that the organization wants produced. But I think the shortfall there, or what organizations fail sometimes to see, is that when we aren't supporting people or women to step out of those patterns, we really aren't giving them the skills to step more into leadership positions or to own their potential to take that next step because they're so stuck. So what can organizations or employers or managers do to support people to step out of those patterns? One of the things we can look at is, you know, is the culture supporting or rewarding overworking? You know, what are the senior leaders or managers, what are they modeling in terms of the expectations around how much we work, that overdoing and overworking? If that's set at the highest level and it trickles down through management and our supervisors, then you'll find that that really reinforces those patterns for people. Whereas if managers or senior people clearly setting good boundaries, healthy boundaries around their work and really touting that idea of it's good enough, let's send it off, or let's get some feedback at this point, it sends the message to the people that we're working with that this isn't, the yardstick isn't about perfectionism. It's about getting things done and also looking after yourself in the process. So there's different ways that we can start to shift some of those cultural elements. But we also want to look at what is it that we're celebrating? So often in meetings, you hear at the beginning or end of meetings, you know, let's celebrate our successes, and people talk about their achievements and often when they've done things perfectly. But there isn't much space for really talking about what mistakes have we made, and not in a negative way, but actually celebrating them. Like, what mistakes, what risks did we take? What did we learn, you know, what opportunities have come from that. And the more that we encourage people to share those stories, the more that they understand that really what they're working towards is progress rather than perfection, and that there is room to make errors because the focus is on learning and growing. And when we do that, we often find that teams and organizations innovate faster and actually better. And I guess one of the things that happens when people are stuck in perfectionism is they get really used to over preparing. So you might recognize this from your own life or know other people, but you know, sometimes we're so good at over preparing and perfecting. For instance, we might go to a meeting and we have exactly what we're going to say, perfect script. But when we get into the meeting, we get a question from left field that we haven't prepared, and we really stumble and fumble, and we're a deer in the headlight. And that's because when we're stuck in perfectionism, we are so reliant on that preparation that we stop trusting ourselves and we stop being able to think on our feet and improvise because we're not developing those skills. So as a manager, you know, I think it's important that we encourage that improvisation in the people that we're working with. So in a safe way, but it might be that in mentoring meetings or in management meetings, you do things like random question time where you just fire questions at each other that you imagine might come up, and just practice in a really safe way what you might say and speaking on your feet so that the people that we're working with really develop that sense of trust and those skills of being able to adapt and respond to whatever comes their way. Yeah, and the last thing I would say in terms of people-pleasing, what can organisations do to help our people who might be stuck in that? I know, Janelle, you said, you know, early in your career, you're certainly stuck in that people-pleasing. You probably had great ideas, but you weren't sharing them. And often that's the case that, you know, our junior staff or new staff have great ideas. Often they're the most innovative out-of-the-box ideas because they've got fresh eyes, but organisations miss out on that because they're holding them or hiding them. So we want to find ways to give voice to everybody, and particularly those people who might be holding back. So one of the ways we can do that is in meetings to get everybody, if there's a problem that we're trying to solve, to get people to write down what they think on a piece of paper, put it in the middle of the table, and then go through them together as a team so that people can share their ideas without feeling threatened or judged. They also get the opportunity to see people's reactions to their ideas. And when they do that, when they see that other people's reactions, it starts to build up this sense of, oh, maybe my ideas are valuable and worth sharing and people want to hear them. And so as we move through our careers, it builds up that sense of trusting our own voice and starting to use it.
Oh my gosh, I absolutely love that and wish that we had some of those practices in place earlier on in my career. So if anyone's listening to this episode who is a people leader, is an aspiring people leader, those sound like really tangible things that you can bring to your team, start to implement slowly or one by one to start cultivating what sounds like a growth mindset among your people and your team, and the psychological safety and feeling of trust that they can voice their ideas and they'll be considered. Even if they're not pitched or shipped, they'll still be considered and welcomed. I love that. So how can women specifically strike that balance between striving for excellence and not succumbing to the pitfalls of perfectionism?
The million-dollar question.
It's a funny one, because when we often talk to people who are stuck in perfectionism about letting go or loosening the grip of perfectionism, a lot of anxiety and fear comes up, because people are so dependent on perfecting things to perform that they fear that if they let go of it, what will that mean? Does that mean that I'll fall in a heap, that I, you know, that I won't be able to strive for excellence in the same way because that's been their go-to for so long? But when we're able to take a step back and look at perfectionism, sometimes we imagine, you know, seeing somebody else who's getting stuck in perfectionism, we might be able to see that perfectionism isn't everything it's cracked up to be. So we can see that perfectionism in some ways really slows us down and ends up burning us out. So once we're able to get that distance, we can look at new ways of striving. So it's not that we want to let go of striving for excellence. It's about how can we try in a new way? And often that means shifting our focus from striving for perfection to striving for progress. So when we're striving for progress, or going for progress, because striving is a bit of a troublesome word, progress involves trying new things and experimenting and taking risks. It also means doing things when we're not 100% ready and making mistakes along the way. So when we're focused on progress, it means that when we make a mistake or when we fail, rather than getting stuck in that harsh self-criticism because I haven't been perfect and what's wrong with me and why aren't I performing, we can actually celebrate, you know, what have I learned from this? You know, look at the risks or the challenges I've stepped into, all the opportunities that have followed from that, and how I've progressed as a result. So this really allows us to keep going and keep building momentum when we're focused on progress. So rather than getting stuck, which so many of us do, on perfecting tiny steps, really what we want to do is encourage people to take imperfect leaps. So this is when we encourage people to think about, what is it that would get me much closer to where I want to go, but what is the thing that I'm avoiding or that I don't feel ready to do yet? And that's a really good place to start to really get us growing and progressing faster, because there's so many things, you know, that each of us don't do or we hesitate on, that we hide on because we don't yet feel ready to do. But often those are the things that are really going to catapult us to the next stage or next level. So, you know, when we answer that question and we look at what are my imperfect leaps, it might be sending a chapter of a book for feedback before we write the whole thing perfectly. Or it might be, you know, putting your hand up for that job or that promotion or that pay rise now rather than waiting. I know there was some research about women going for pay rises. I think it was that women apply for pay rises, or men apply for pay rises 4 times more often than women, and that women ask for 30% less when they do. So there's something to think about, leaping. And it might be, you know, what is it that I'm not doing, or what don't I feel quite ready to do? It might be sending out expressions of interest for a course that you haven't fully designed yet, you haven't written, or going for that TED talk that you haven't practiced 1,000 times. It's really about checking in on what are my imperfect leaps, because this allows us to keep striving, keep making progress, but without all of that pain and struggle that often comes with perfectionism.
That just gave me so much energy hearing you put it that way. What are the imperfect leaps over the tiny perfect steps that I can take? I would have never thought about it that way, but I even just got it visually. I saw it kind of like taking a somewhat clumsy leap, but getting so much further than I would if I were doing 1 foot after the other in perfect step. I think that's such a beautiful way to illustrate that.
In terms of striving when it comes to people pleasing, when people feel stuck in people pleasing, they feel like they have to, you know, think about what other people want perfectly all the time. And, you know, we're just totally focused on the approval of other people. And this can lead us in all sorts of directions which are not our own, because we're so focused on what someone else wants for us that we don't actually end up doing what is important to us. And so we can end up doing jobs that we don't like, saying yes to things that we don't want to do just because we don't want to let people down, but essentially we have our ladder up against the wrong wall because we're not listening to what we really want.
Wow.
So when we feel like we're being led by the opinions or approval of others, we often feel like we're in this sort of tug of war between something that you want for yourself, that little voice inside of you that's, you know, quietly screaming out, please listen to me. But we don't feel like we can quite act on it yet. So what we really want to do is shift into listening more to our own instinct and that inner wisdom that we have. Because within all of us, we actually really know what is important to us, what's meaningful to us, what is going to really make us feel excited to be at work or doing what we're doing. And it's about learning to listen to that, because that little voice has often been silenced for so long. But if we start to give it a little bit of a voice, then we can learn a lot about ourselves and take new directions. And a part of this is also, you know, unfortunately, it's about letting people down sometimes. But what we learn when we actually start having our own boundaries is that people actually start respecting us and our position a lot more. When we're constantly doing what other people want for us, what other people want of us, sorry, I should say, is that they learn to treat us in that same sort of way. So we are constantly putting down our own opinions, our voice, etc. And so other people just assume that they can sort of railroad us a lot of the time and or steamroll us. And so what we want to do is, by starting to have a few more boundaries, by listening to our voice and voicing that a lot more, when we start to do that gently and in a polite kind of way, people actually respect us a lot more, and then they start to treat us with a lot more respect as well. And so this is a way that we can start to move out of people pleasing, because once we learn that we can have a voice, other people actually appreciate having a voice a lot more. You know, think about people who have good boundaries in your life, and chances are you probably feel a lot more safe and comfortable around them than those people who always say yes and do whatever, but you know that secretly they're resenting you because they're not actually doing what, you know, is right for them. It's a nice way to think about a shift in that way as well.
That's fantastic. The bit about boundaries comes up so much in my conversations with clients or friends, knowing that we need that separation and we need to hold those firm, but being so worried about what other people will think or upsetting someone else. It's really encouraging to hear from this like professional perspective that actually in enforcing our boundaries, people might respect us more. And it may actually have the opposite but positive effect that we've been so worried that it would have on our colleagues or our bosses. That's really encouraging to hear.
Absolutely, yeah. Firm but kind is the way that I always think about it.
Amazing. Can you share some success stories from your practice about real women who have overcome perfectionism and people-pleasing to accomplish some amazing things in their careers?
Sure. So one woman comes to mind. We'll call her Zara. She, like many women that we come across or that we know in ourselves, was in a career that she really didn't like. And she had, you know, followed the advice of other people. She'd been told you're a people person and you're extroverted. And so she had ended up in tech sales because that's what she was told, you know, would be suited to her strengths. And she'd worked, I think, you know, for 10 or 15 years by this point, working her way up the ladder, thinking that as she got closer to the top, that it would feel more rewarding. And while she made more money, it actually just got her more and more trapped because she felt less able to leave because the cost of leaving became bigger and bigger. And, you know, I think many of us can relate to that. So she decided to move to the UK. At the time, she was feeling pretty disengaged and disconnected. And I remember a conversation that I had with her where she said, you know, I look around at my life and particularly at my work, and I just can't see myself. It's just not a reflection of me. It's a reflection of the influences and opinions of other people, you know, whether that's my parents or my partner or my friends. You know, I've done all the things that people have said I should do to have a successful and happy life, but that's not how I'm feeling on the inside. And so she started out, I guess, trying to really connect with and get curious about what are the things that matter to me? What are the things that resonate to me? Really trying to tap into that intuition and that, you know, inner sense of wisdom and guidance. So she started out small. She tried a whole range of things, you know, classic Zumba and salsa and other things. But she also, during that time, took a cooking class. And She was, at the time, I think she was basically living off toasted cheese sandwiches. I mean, she was not a cook at all. but, you know, in the first class, she just loved it. It was one of those things that, you know, everything clicked in place and she loved to do it. And she spent all her evenings making cakes and decorating them perfectly. And she just jumped in, teamed up with another girl who was doing, another woman doing the course. And they started an Australian catering company over there. And they really cooked from their own hearts, you know, as in terms of cooking the food that reflected who they are and their stories. And that really resonated. They did really well. But she ended up writing landing two book deals to write, writing two recipe books that were half autobiography, half recipes. But they really celebrated her story, her history, you know, right back through the generations. It was a real expression of her. So she was really writing from a place of true connection with herself. And, you know, as so often happens, when we allow ourselves to show up and speak from who we really are, that's when people listen. And that's what's happened. So, you know, she's often on the Drew Barrymore show and cooking with all these celebrities now.
What?
And this is what happened in
Wow.
Yeah, so it's happened in a couple of years, but I think it's just one of those beautiful stories that illustrate what happens when we let go of following what other people say we should do or doing what makes sense to other people and just tune in and listen to, you know, what sits right with me. And when we follow that, we, you know, often can really go places and find our voice. So, yeah.
Wow. I absolutely love that. Thank you so much for going through all of those extremely tangible strategies for how we may start to recognize and overcome perfectionism and people pleasing. Before I let you go, I did put out a call on my Instagram story. Make sure you're following along at Janelle Ibrahimi to ask listeners and audience members their questions about perfectionism and people pleasing. So I want to read you some of the questions we got in, if that's cool with you guys.
Absolutely. Yep.
Amazing. So some of these questions we've actually dabbled or touched on in our conversation so far. One from Abby was setting boundaries without making others defensive or not trust you. So from what I was hearing, it's actually, it may have the reverse effect that if you are kind but firm in your boundaries, that actually garners more respect from folks who understand where you're coming from. But is there anything else you'd like to add there?
I'd also just explain why you're setting that boundary. There's some great research that they did a really long time ago because it was in line for a photocopier where if you explained why you need to skip the queue of the photocopier, it was something like 80 or 90% of people let you skip the queue. So yeah, I just explain why you're setting the boundary because when people know why you are doing that, they're much more likely to go along with it and a lot less likely to get defensive. Push back.
Yeah. I would also add sometimes when we're trying to assert ourselves, we fall into the trap of feeling like we need to show up sometimes like men and to be quite clear and direct in our communication. And that can backfire, particularly for women when we do that. So we want to amp up the assertiveness, but at the same time also amp up the warmth. You know, we want to do it in a way where we're setting a boundary, but we're not necessarily dropping that warmth out of the conversation because that allows people to really hear what we're saying without us suffering the blow of also them judging us or not liking us because of what we're saying.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Melanie asks something that we also touched on, but maybe there's more context here. How do you gauge when something is done and not perfect and move on?
I think it's really about getting feedback earlier a lot of the time. So I know Cass mentioned earlier cutting our time in half, sending it off for feedback at that point and seeing what comes back rather than getting stuck in our own heads, perfecting everything is basically as early as you can, sending off a rough draft so that we can really skip out of that long road of perfecting and checking. That can take days.
Yeah, that can go wild if we don't keep it checked. And then finally, Marion asks, how do you disagree with someone more powerful than you without impacting the relationship?
That's a hard one. Again, it's about being gentle some of the time, treading softly. often, you know, people get on the back foot if they feel like they're being attacked. So as long as we're avoiding that, we can disagree with people. Like you said, Janelle, you know, often, you know, it's actually welcome and you wish you did it a bit more. We're not necessarily, you know, by voicing our opinion, by sharing something contrary, we're not saying that they're wrong. We're just adding to the conversation. So if we're positioning it from that place, it can often help to really get people listening to you rather than it just feeling like you're attacking them or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also often when we disagree with somebody, we have the same intention. So we're working towards the same thing, but we might not agree on how to do that. And so it can be useful to frame the conversation by front-ending, look, we're both working towards this one thing. This is the outcome that we're driving towards. You know, we're aligned in this way. And then talk about the differences of how you get there so that it takes it out of it being a personal attack or a personal conflict to really just looking at what are the different ways that we can look at meeting this goal that we share. And that allows us to stay aligned in those discussions.
That's excellent.
One thing I'll also say is often when we change our communication style with someone, they're used to communicating with us in a certain kind of way. And so when we start to do things a bit differently, often we can get quite a negative reaction at first because the other person will just amp up what they're used to doing. So they might like keep pushing back on you. I really encourage people, if you start trying to change how you're communicating, just keep persisting with it. It's not a good indicator how people initially respond to you when you first start changing how you communicate with them, because they're used to communicating with you in a certain way and they'll try and push you back into the way that they're used to communicating with you. So just keep at it. And if you just keep applying those principles of, you know, doing things with warmth, kindness, thinking about what like the common goal is, but being firm with your boundaries, you will get there eventually and people will start to respect and treat you differently as well.
So helpful. Thank you both so much. Cass and Alicia, how can folks keep up with what you've got going on?
So you can follow us on Instagram. Our handle is tend_women. Or you can follow us on our website, which is www.tendher.co. And we work a lot with organizations, both virtually and in person, but also with schools as well. You know, this stuff starts early on, so we like to get in there from the get-go.
Perfect. Thank you both so much for this conversation. I am certain it's going to help a lot of people who are listening.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If it resonated with you, please take a minute to leave a 5-star rating and review of the show and follow along on social at Janelle Abrahami. It really, really means the world. And if you're ready to step into a career that actually means something to you, send me a message. I might have a career coaching spot open for you. Until next time, stay creative, stay curious, stay kind.